Councilmember Erickson?
Present.
Councilmember Morrison?
Here.
Mayor Winston?
Present.
Councilmember Tran?
Here.
Councilmember Lee?
Here.
Councilmember Klonowski?
Here.
Mayor Winston, you have the floor.
And I'll call the roll for the Planning Commission. Commissioner Cannon?
Present.
Commissioner Waco?
Present.
Commissioner Borer?
Present.
Commissioner Tekau?
Here.
Commissioner Fraser?
Here.
Commissioner Yu is excused. Commissioner O'Donnell is not here. Commissioner Gabei?
Yeah.
Commissioner Turner? Commissioner Turner?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Is that something you want in? Yeah, she won't be here, so it's not too bad.
Okay. So if we could go ahead and I guess we'll go ahead and jump into the meeting. I know that you're going to give a little bit more, Director Mokusha, you're going to give a little bit more input, but I'm just going to say that there's going to be, from my understanding, there's going to be some options put in front of us. They're going to be briefly. We want to have it be understood that staff is not telling us that these are the only options or that they're even recommending their options. I think it's kind of showing, juxtaposing the different concepts so that we can kind of understand what options are available and what spaces we'll be playing in. So I'll go ahead and turn it over from there, and I know you have a presentation to make, and then we'll go into a general discussion. And what I would like to see come out of this is we're not making any decisions here, just a better understanding of maybe some different opportunities we have, different options, and then just to get an understanding of, especially council, since they'll be voting on this, where folks kind of stand on this as well. But we very much value the input of the Planning Commission, because we know you guys look at this on a regular basis as well. You guys signed up for this. So, all right. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Mayor Winston. Welcome, everybody. It's great to see the Planning Commission and City Council sitting together to discuss this really important topic. The mayor's introduction was exactly right. I was going to say basically the same thing, so I won't. other than to reiterate one part of it, which is that the intent tonight isn't to make any decisions. In fact, I would go a little bit farther in saying that, you know, we are going to see three different scenarios here. And the goal with all of this is to come up with zoning regulations that meet the intent of the mayor and the council related to the interim ordinance or the moratorium. Okay, so we're figuring out ways that we can raise the bar for the value of development that we're getting in the northern part of the city. That was the stated goal, increase the property tax base, and thereby, you know, over time, the intent would be to reduce the property tax burden then on single-family residential properties as we increase the tax base in the northern part of the city over time. So we're not making any decisions tonight. We're going to look at three scenarios. And I want to emphasize that when this is all over in the coming weeks, we don't necessarily even need to pick one of these scenarios. We can draw from the things that we like and use what we draw from that to turn that into zoning regulations for governing land use in this area. So with that said, I'd like to turn it over to Cameron Bailey at NEO Partners. NEO is a planning and development firm based locally here in downtown St. Paul with great expertise in both development and planning. We're really lucky to have them on this team. And I'll let Cameron introduce the rest of the team and get going on the presentation.
Sure thing. Thank you, Paul. Pleasure, everybody. Thanks for having us here. Pleasure to connect with you all. As Paul said, my name is Cameron Bailey. I serve as the Director of Real Estate Development at NEO Partners. This is my colleague, Sam King. Sam heads up over on the engagement side of our work, and he supported us on the engagement side of this study that we were luckily selected to work with the City of Brooklyn Park on. I'll say we also have two other colleagues that are in transit right now from the airport. So our lead architect designer for our firm, Marlon King, is coming up from our Jackson, Mississippi office. And then our CEO, D'Angelo Sminkison, who really is one of the key founders of our organization. He's on his way here as well. So don't be surprised if come knocking in about 10 minutes. But we don't want to keep that from us getting started. A lot of content to go over. So if it's cool with you all, go through the agenda first, give you a sense of orientation, how we'll spend the time together this evening, and then we'll drop down into the presentation itself. So Paul, thank you for doing intros. We're going to go over the really explicit goals of today's working group meeting. We're going to go over the scenario modeling that we've done for this study. Then we're going to go over the phase one. There's multiple phases. The phase one fiscal feasibility analysis that we've been able to perform to date. Then I will not bore you, but I have to touch on some of the data methodologies behind it. We'll lay out next steps. We're working track on this work through September. And then we'll be doing some small group breakouts. Report back out. And then Sam will touch on some of our public engagement work, which is coming up directly next in our scope of work. Alrighty. So, Paul, you kind of already gave the intro, but yeah. If you want to...
No, you keep the floor.
Cool. So I imagine a lot of y'all are familiar with the Zane Commons focus area of the 610 northwest portion of the city, as you can see on the map. And I hope the screen's visible online as well. And that white box, I think you can see my cursor, it's lagging a little bit. The white box is the primary area we were asked to evaluate, to run different development scenarios and then evaluate the fiscal feasibility of each of those development scenarios. Thank you. So for today, there's two primary questions we're seeking to facilitate y'all's feedback. Mm-hmm. The first one of which is, what are y'all's thoughts on the scenarios we're going to present relative to council's stated goal, increasing the value of development within that portion of the city? And the second one, what changes should we make to the materials to make it easier for the public to engage with these scenarios when we kick off that engagement piece? And hopping right into it. So scenario one of three, high density, high intensity, we kind of shorthand named it a town center development scenario. What you're seeing here is an aerial view with the top being the north orientation. And what you see in yellow is residential, red being commercial, predominantly retail. And then those gray boxes that you see, so on site L, the top left corner, that's a parking ramp. The site G, site K, site E, those are all parking ramps in the center of the layout. And then F, what looks like an empty spot is actually underground parking, where you see site J, that's kind of a central commons park. And then over here on the left, or most western side of the layout, site D. This is kind of wraparound retail of large surface parking. You'll notice, also in H, there's some surface parking, but that's basically it for surface parking. The land uses that you see here, pretty short and sweet. It's commercial, a lot of residential. We'll get the numbers of how much parks, and then parking in the sense that these are, you know, standalone structures. As parking ramps. The reference that we use for this, and I think some of y'all were on the tour recently over Excelsior Grand, St. Louis Park, and that's what we really use to inform this level of intensity of development, the mixed-use format and nature of the development scenarios that we laid out, as well as kind of the walkability and connections throughout the site, really facilitating a place within this planned development area. I think on the next slide, you'll get a better sense. So it's kind of an oblique imagery, so giving a sense of height. And what you'll see there is we're tall. It's from north looking down south. And you'll notice floor area ratio, probably a lot higher than most buildings.
Explain what that is.
Yes, thank you. Floor area ratio. What is the ratio of the number of floor space relative to just the ground? So the higher your floor area ratio means you got a taller building. The max height we put on this was 7 stories. So really testing the extreme end of scenario modeling. I don't know if I passed anything over 2 stories on my drive in here this evening. Maybe the bleachers over at the high school. Big component of this was the fit test. So when we say scenario modeling, that's why we had our architect really leading on this, because we're laying these out through a developer and our community development and engagement lens. So we need to find a place. It's not just the infrastructure, right? It's how people are able to connect and form new connections. So with that pond over on the left side of the picture, that's where we left that, why we put that underground ramp right there. So having a clear sight line from that kind of central commons park area to be able to go out across the top of the underground parking ramp to double as an additional public amenity and gathering space, and to have, you know, a lake view. So kind of being anchored by 7-story development. That's all residential, as you can see, just the yellows on that portion by the park. So really a central park for a living place, and thinking of that road as the kind of the central focus, the central kind of thoroughfare focus. We talked about too, it creates the ability to actually even block off that street for, you know, kind of one day events or weekend long events. So really leaning to the idea of having infrastructure and amenities built up double and triple for multiple benefits. Further on the right, where we identify that retail, you see that red, so that's all 2/5 with retail on the first floor, and then come on in, y'all.
Come on in.
I told you they were coming soon. About 7 minutes. So for those online, a couple more of our colleagues and male partners. And so I'm kind of laying that all out to speak to what we mean by saying a fit test. It's taking into account what are the natural features we want to accentuate, and that's support, higher market rate, new development, and higher property values. Blending in with the adjacent uses in terms of existing retail and housing, which is why we cited the retail on the western end of the site to mirror the existing retail across the street. Driving in and highlighting those sight lines that are existing as like true amenities and continuing to lean into those. So another part of that sight lines of the lake is there's an existing parks trail right there to tie into the lake to go around it. So leaning into existing infrastructure, building on top of that. And of course the opportunity for increased connectivity within the site itself. And to give a little visual to it, the one you see here on the left is the lattice development over off Shingle Creek Parkway in Brooklyn Center. And then on the right is another image from the Excelsior Grid. And just to give a sense at that the street level, that walkability, because we haven't done design work on like the streetscaping, you know, big patios, wide sidewalks, and setbacks and all that. It's really at this point getting sight lines, the fit tests, the form, the height intensity, those basic core functions we kind of have to lock into place before we can, I'm trying to think of a better word than sexy, before we can get sexy and start doing more fun stuff with our model.
Yeah, just go with sexy.
Mayor says cool. All right.
Yeah, we're laid back.
Appreciate it. Alrighty. So I'm trying not to speed through this to keep us all on the same page. We're going to keep the same format as we move into scenario 2. And then we're going to pop into business as usual scenario. So looking at current zoning guidance. Scenario 2, we're identifying as medium density. Reference point here is Edson Apartments off of New Brighton Boulevard over in City of Roseville. Land uses, you'll recognize commercial, residential, parks, and parking. You also notice office. We're very careful not to throw too much office in there. And the office you see here is that little blue portion on the west side of the map. So the idea of siting the office between where a lot of the residential is and the mixed use and the existing retail across the street further west is that kind of a centralized point of a lot of that commercial activity. You of course see the surface parking lot there. And as you look across the map, you see a lot more surface parking lots in the middle of these structures as we've modeled them. And that's because we're much lower in height on this scenario. And so when you're much lower in height, it makes it a lot harder to make structured parking or a parking ramp pencil out from a developer's perspective. And so to reflect that, a lot of those parking ramps ended up becoming surface parking lots. Other than that, you'll notice that the park is still there. I'll get into the height and we'll get our angles here in a second. And the same retail on the western portion of the site, and really E, K, and H, those are really mixed-use developments. So you can kind of see the transition as we go from existing retail in the west and start transitioning more heavily and then purely residential to the east and north to be in alignment with the existing adjacent land uses. And to get a little visual going here, so our FAR, which we remember as floor area ratio, that was great. Again, the ratio of the square footage of the building as a whole relative to just the ground. You'll notice here we're a lot shorter height-wise. So the max height we put in here is five stories. So coming down a fair amount on the max height. And you'll also see everything isn't capped out at five stories. So we have the retail and office on the right side of the screen, which if you're looking at the site overhead, it's on the west side of the development, adjacent to where we apply the existing retail. We start lower to match that existing height. And as we move east across the site, we start to raise up in height. So from a human walkability and comfort perspective, you know, it's a gradual rise in the distance from the retail area. And then we're maintaining the park and the sight lines. We had replaced the underground parking with surface parking between the lake and that kind of Central Park Commons area. But that still has the ability to double as an amenity space, and then still keeping the central kind of through corridor as a focal point street for the development. And same things on the fit test side, taking the natural features, the adjacent retail and housing sight lines, and the connectivity. And for this scenario, as I said, we're looking at the Edison Apartments as a really good example of that level of density and intensity. So you see here, this is three and four stories, so kind of matching that on the purely residential side. You know, this is a lot less retail and commercial activity, because the majority of the site would be, in this scenario, would be residential without the mixed-use commercial component, and a lot more surface parking. So really stepping down from that intensity is something probably looks a lot more familiar when we're driving around the city. And now we're slotting into the third scenario, which is business as usual, and our reference point was the city of Brooklyn Park. Looked at the zoning ordinance and the existing land use guidance and modeled for that. So what you see in white across the site, these are kind of attached single family homes, so think of townhouses. The max height that we put on this one was two stories, and so still getting greater density than if we had detached single family homes. You also notice that there's, on one hand, it seems like a lot more green space in terms of front and back lawns, but that is all private green space. So hopefully that's kind of starting to lay out some of the trade-offs we get here. Where you saw the centralized park commons in the other two scenarios, you see a development because there's not enough intensity in the area to support reserving an entire, it's a single acre park. Reserving an entire acre for a central park and commons area. Don't have the density to support that from the development private dollar perspective, so that had to go. Additionally, definitely no underground parking in this scenario. It's all above ground parking, private parking. And then in those other two scenarios, one piece I did leave off is we modeled that for about a third of the structured parking, so parking ramps, to be accessible to the public as well. So when doing these larger events and programming and ideally having folk around the city come and visit this place, that there's free parking available for folk to park and walk around this larger development site. Business as usual. We're certainly not able to facilitate financially parking ramps, let alone publicly available parking spaces in the development. that are supporting any sort of activity, fun, recreation outside of, you know, clearly these privately owned parking lots at these larger retail spaces. And so putting that on an angle, this is looking from south to north. This is the one we had flipped around. So looking from south to north, use a pond or lake to orient you. That floor area ratio, 0.6, pretty low. The maximum height, given that at two stories, and doing the test fit for the same uses, the same considerations. And, these are examples of functioning what that looks like. Big box retail, big surface parking lots, a lot of green space that is amenity barren, and really serving as more private grass to cut, not so much a public amenity. And our land uses, you'll notice, also shrink down significantly. Now it's just residential and some light commercial. Ooh, okay. Thank you. All right, what y'all came for? Some of the financials, some of the numbers. I'm curious to see folks' reaction to these numbers. All right, so we broke it out across scenario one, the high intensity, the town center scenario. Housing, retail, parking, park or public space, and office space. For housing, in the high intensity scenario, we're talking about 4,900 housing units. Talking about roughly 4.5 million square feet of leasable space. And that's making up approximately 67% of these four land uses that you see here. On the retail side, that's almost 200,000 square feet of retail, making about 3% of all the land uses in that high-intensity scenario. Parking, you'll see close to a third, 8,600 stalls. So between the one, we used a 1.4 parking ratio for the residential units. Between that and 200,000 square feet of retail space, that brought us about 8,600 stalls for parking and close to 2 million square feet on the parking square footage. And then to round that out, again, the park is closer to 2 acres, 91,000 square feet at about 1% of that space. And some of those first two numbers look familiar. The floor area ratio is about 2.5. Again, it's vertical square footage relative to just the ground, the footprint square footage. That maximum height, capping that at 7 stories. Total development cost. Remember here, we're thinking about being rolled out with a 20-year scenario. $1.7 billion, so a Viking football stadium in the form of a different type of development. I think the stadium is more than that. Public subsidy costs. And I just want to point out here on the public subsidy costs, the things we identified at this point, as I said, this is the first phase, putting bones and structure together with the scenario modeling before we get sexy with it. The public subsidy cost here is on the parking, specifically the public parking. And the second component is affordable housing. So we use a calculator for 15% housing for every scenario. 15% of the housing being at 60% area median income, and then calculating the difference in cost of that housing relative to market rate costs. We roll that in with the public parking. That's how we get that public subsidy cost of $129 million. Now the annual tax revenue, we're looking at $9.55 million a year. I'll say on the tax revenue side, we had to use historical figures. So Aaron, super helpful, big thanks. Getting us the tax actuals for this most previous tax season on the commercial side, residential side for large apartments and smaller single family, smaller multifamily. And so we use those actual percentages, but that's why this meeting is really important. So we can make sure we're on the right page and on the right track. We'll be able to meet with the City of Brooklyn Park's kind of representative of Hennepin County through the County Assessor's Office to actually give us a much more specific estimate of how the taxation structure would work.
And just point out, this number is the city share.
Yes.
This is all this.
Yes, specifically
all the city share.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not yours specifically.
Yeah, no, no.
County share, and this is specifically City of Brooklyn Park share.
I just had a question regarding the affordable housing. So you said 60 was a target AMI. Are you talking 60 and below or 60 and above?
We modeled it for 60%.
For 60 is the average?
Yes, ma'am.
Got it.
Thank you.
And I have a question too.
Yes, sir.
Are you able to provide us with all these slides?
Yep. Yes.
And we will provide them electronically afterwards, but also when we get in the breakout sessions, you'll have all this in paper in front of you to refer to.
Oh, okay, yeah, because that's a lot to.
Yes, you don't need to come in on
No, it's a lot.
And if I can piggyback on a question, and it may be premature, but from scenario one to scenario two, you went from 7 stories to 5 stories. Are you able to tell us what we lose with those 2 absent stories in the 2 scenarios?
In terms of
whatever we lost?
Yes, yes I can. You almost seem like a plant because that's where we're going. So I'm going to go over this kind of high level phase 1 fiscal feasibility summary for each of the 3 scenarios, and then we have a slide where we'll be able to see all 3 together, make it a lot easier to kind of do that cross comparison analysis. Called our apples to apples slide. And this last piece here, and this is what was specifically in the request for a proposal, was a value per acre calculation. And so when we take that full development cost and divide that out across those 43.3 acres, places it at $40.1 million per acre. Now, what do you get with this really high intensity scenario? If able to realize it over that 20-year period. Public and private amenities, and a lot of them, that are incredibly dynamic and dynamic in their design, that drive greater property values than any other scenario, and well above business as usual. We'll be able to see that comparison here in a couple of slides, and create multiple places. So when we say places, we mean people can live, they can recreate, they can grow. That draw in customers from across the city, thereby driving greater property values than scenario 2, which tees us up to look at scenario 2, the medium density scenario. So on the housing side, I think you'll remember we were, I think, at 4,900 units on the housing side. We're at 2,020. We're at 2 million square feet, making up roughly the same percentage of the overall usage of the site, 66%. Retail, we dropped down from almost 200,000 to 143,000 square feet. Parking, I believe we were 8,600 and changed stalls. Now we're down to 3,700, still making up a significant percentage of the overall usage of roughly a quarter. Park public space, we're able to retain that 2-acre park that's central to this development, and then tacking on that those 30,000 square feet of office in this scenario, which is about 1% of the overall usage. That floor area ratio, we're at 1.2, so roughly half of the high intensity scenario, which is at 2.45. Maximum height, as you said, we dropped from 7 to 5 as the maximum height. Total development cost, I believe we're at $1.7 billion in the scenario 1. This is $0.73 billion, or $730 million. The public subsidy cost, that drops. Of course, if it's proportional, that drops us to $29.3 million. And the annual tax revenues from $9 million and change to $4 million a year, specifically for the city. And then value per acre, that drops from 40 to roughly 17, so less than half of the high intensity scenario. And in this scenario, we still get public and private amenities, just a smaller degree. We still drive greater property values than the adjacent area currently does. And we're still going to create a place that's sized for the interests of the new residents and those adjacent to the development area, rather than an anchor point attracting citywide. So think of that. We scale down, our sphere of influence also scales down. And then business as usual. Last year we were at 2,200, we're at 714 housing units, 740,000 square feet. Housing makes up an even larger percentage, and in this scenario it makes up the largest percentage at almost 3/4 of the usage. Retail dropped down a lot, down to 66,000 square feet, about 6% of space, and then parking, none of it structured, all surface, 932 stalls, roughly 200,000 square feet, and and similar to other scenarios, just under a quarter of the usage. Floor area ratio, 0.6 maximum height, two stories. Total development costs, you can read that as $261 million, or a quarter billion. The public subsidy costs is definitely in the lowest, 10.2, and the majority of that is on the affordable housing units across the site. The annual tax revenue, $1.45 million, is for the whole site, to the city specifically. And then value per acre drops as we were at 16 before this to 6. And kind of big pictures in terms of what business as usual can support, relatively few public and private amenities, especially on the public side. Drive property values pretty similar to those of existing adjacent properties, and can create an additional primarily car dependent area with not a high degree of connectivity within the site. Of a city for accessing typical fun, retail, and social experiences. So kind of more of the same. This is the full roll-up. Man, I thought that'd be zoomed in a little tighter. Okay. So work from the top down. I'll try to speak to this. Floor area ratio, high intensity scenario 1, 2.5. Medium density, basically cut that in half and drop to 1.2. And then business as usual, so where zoning is right now, 0.6. Scenario 1, we're at 7. High intensity scenario, medium density, we drop down to 5. Business as usual, 2-story. Housing units, 4,900 in the high intensity with over 700 affordable housing units. Scenario 2, medium density, 2,000 housing units, 300 of which will be affordable. And business as usual, 700 new units, just over 100 of which would be affordable. The square footages are the same that we saw before. So draw your attention to the bottom of the page, these last five rows. Total development cost, we're talking about the difference of $1.7 billion, $734 million, and $260 million across the three scenarios.
The $740 billion. Three-quarters of a billion, not million, right?
Yes, sorry, thank you. $734 million.
Billion.
Million.
Oh, I thought you said billion.
No, the first one, $1.7 billion, sorry.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, I'm good. I'm glad we're on the same page. So yeah, $1.7 billion, scenario 1, $734 million, scenario 2, $260 million, scenario 3. The total upfront affordable housing subsidy and public parking subsidy, I broke those out from each other. So you're looking at $41 million in the high intensity scenario for housing, $87 million for the structured parking. Scenario 2, $28 million for the housing affordable, $463,000 for the public parking subsidy. And then business as usual, $10 million for the affordable housing. And then, of course, that ultimate bottom line, the value per acre, where it's stepping down from $40 million to, we can say, $17 million to $6 million. Damn. Data and methods. So natural features, as we said, the water body, existing parks and trails, the topography of the site, as well as the existing, kind of, you can say, topography of the built environment in terms of existing heights in the adjacent area, demographics, existing right-of-way, traffic data for the corridor. We're not doing a traffic study, more so taking traffic data that's available and using it to inform, as we talk about our fit test work. Service standard metrics, so incorporating in roadway construction and maintenance schedules for the city, sewer, water, solid waste, and utilities. Service standards, so we can build those costs in. This is all, not all of it, but a lot of this is going to be in the phase two component. And then existing policies and plans. So using up-to-date zoning code ordinances for the applicable geographic area, using recent development plan approvals within the area, and then, of course, looking at existing land use and so on.
So what's the next step?
Perfect. Yeah. Let me just pop to that slide so people can see it. I'm going to bring
bring something up on the screen. So,
okay, let me stop sharing.
Okay, so we've hit the point in the evening. Sorry, Jay.
Yep. Can I ask a quick question? Yep. On your housing units, are they assumed to be all rental, combination of owned and rental? What's the in the three different scenarios? You could walk us through that.
Yeah. So on this one, did it for rental, looking at what's the price of constructing a market rate unit. And then basically take that difference between what a market rate tenant would be able to pay in rent and 6% AMI, and we prorate that for what they were owning, because someone has to finance that, they're taking on all that money. So that difference is what we built into it.
But of course, that's for the purposes of this financial analysis. And, you know, in the real world of development, you know, it'll be whatever the developer proposes in terms of rental versus ownership.
And he said the city has flexibility as well in terms of where across the site the affordable units would be in terms of blended across any parcel versus any singular developments having all the affordable units.
And I'm not asking necessarily about affordable versus total. I'm asking about how many of the housing units are you projecting to be rental units versus owner occupied units.
So, Jay, D'Angelo's with NAO, right now that's not contemplated. It's more about the typology of building and what can fit as part of a test fit. The determination between ownership and rental is probably through the next phase of our analysis. So it could be apartment-style condominium ownership, or it could have been rentals as part of the two townhouse style. We didn't dive into that yet.
Okay.
In scenario number one, you've got apartments over business, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So six stories of apartments and one story of business.
I believe in the mixed-use ones we had, Marlon, you can correct me, it's two stories retail.
It's five over two construction.
Yeah, five over two. Okay.
So it's five stories and residential.
And
in our past planning meetings, we talked to developers and they said, that's not feasible. You cannot have that much apartments above retail, and developers just don't build them. So,
so I would say, like, as a standalone project, on it standing on its own accord, potentially that could be the case when we're talking about a district that's making a sizable investment in public amenities and private amenities. I think you start to get a different tune because it's going to be larger phases done at one time. So the market that exists in isolation with individual parcels could be different in context of many parcels coming online with higher quality or different qualities and price points at the same time.
It just seems like a lot of apartments for that area.
So can I ask a question? I think you said you would not be doing a traffic study. Would the city be doing that before any decisions are made?
So when we get to the point of proposing actual zoning changes, you know, we do need to take a look at some of those bases, like water, all of those infrastructure questions about making sure we have the capacity for water supply and storm sewers. And a basic understanding of the impact to surrounding roadways. The detailed analysis that would take place would be with actual development that's proposed. But certainly for the purposes of determining the zoning, yes, we do need to do a high level analysis, and we will.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? Is there any potential to explore more of a retail focused area with multi-level retail, sort of what Maple Grove might have, or some of the Mendota Heights has some where there's housing adjacent but there's multi-level retail for office above and some retail below?
Brother Marlon, welcome to whatever title.
No one wants the hot seat.
I would say it's easy for us to model a building, right? The typology doesn't change. And so if the typology matches the intensity that you're okay with, then it can get subbed out with office or whatever usage above. But, you know, as kind of Paul lays out, at that point, it's kind of developer driven once you set how dense you're willing to let an area become.
And I'll add to that, you know, one of the things that I think we're going to need to be exploring and identifying with when we look at the actual zoning after this phase is, since our goal is to increase the contribution that new development has to the tax base, are we going to identify a floor? Like, what's the least that we expect a developer to do in terms of how much development they put on a property? Related to that, then, to Councilmember Kwanowski's question is, are there places on this map where we are going to insist that there be certain land uses? Like, if you're going to build something, it has to include a retail component. If we're, that is the thing that we can do with zoning. We do need to be judicious with that, so that we're not, we don't have expectations that are bigger than what's realistic over 10 or 20 or whatever time horizon, number of years. But that, I think that gets to that question, Councilmember Kwanowski, is that, you know, what's the bottom of our expectations?
And what are some of the exemptions we want coming out of this, things we don't believe bring adequate value?
Car washes.
Thank you. We think we have
oil
a few.
Change. First I want to, I want to know, I guess, what are the next steps in terms of this meeting today? And then I have a few comments I want to make, but I just want to keep us on task.
Yeah. So we are exactly on time right now for our intended next step, which is to go into three breakout groups. So because this is a larger group, we thought we would break out, have some individual discussions facilitated by Kim and Brianne and myself, and then bring that back to the larger group to report back what we all talked about. And then we've got a few next steps kinds of things that we can do.
So before we head into that, one of the things I know that, there's going to be questions about the density, but I think one of the issues that we have seen in the past when we talk about Brooklyn Park wanting to have certain restaurants, certain kinds of entertainment, is Brooklyn Park is, it's not necessarily like Plymouth. You know, Plymouth has more of a homogeneous makeup. There are some differences. You know, I grew up there. There's some different areas where there's more apartments and less apartments, but generally they're a lot more homogeneous than Brooklyn Park. And a lot of times when these restaurants will come in, they will say, in this square mile radius, what is the income? We're looking for this type of income, we're looking for that density. And I think for some of the restaurants that people are looking for, some of those experiences, we're gonna have to get comfortable saying, well, how do we increase some of the density in particular areas that are going to be the ones who, in addition to people in Brooklyn Park, use these restaurants? And I don't think that that's something that we have discussed much as a city, which is partially why we're going through this process here, so that people can better understand that. But if we're thinking that we're going to get some restaurants with the current density and the makeup we have, so if you think of what does it look like above 93rd, what does it look like between 85th and 93rd, and then in some areas, what does it look like below 85th, that density is not there for some of the restaurants that people want. So we also have to be very aware that we have to look at some of this density. Last thing I'll say is this, people can hold it in their mind if they want to. Where, you know, when you get to that size of 100,000 and Brooklyn Park is going to get there, how do we want to have control over that 100,000? Once we hit that 100,000, Brooklyn Park becomes, we're already this. In my mind, we're already this, but a first-class city in terms of actual designation. Once you become 100,000, there are certain, at the federal level, the state level, right, there's certain benefits that you get in terms of resources that you can use. We don't have access to those resources, when in reality, we're dealing with many of the problems that first-class cities are already dealing with, even though I always feel like we're first-class. So I would say keep that in mind as we look through these different options. We're headed there. How do we get there in a way that we're in control and that we're bringing, you know, residents and opportunities that fit with where we want to go in Brooklyn Park? But it's a place that we're heading. And we need to get there anyways, because that funding has to be there for us to be the city that ultimately we're going to be 10, 15, 20, 40, 50 years from now. So I guess we can go ahead and I know staff, you have breakout groups in mind, so.
I have one question, a couple of questions.
So let's limit it to two. and then we get into housing.
Sounds great. we'll do that. It sounds like knowing the goal, that have you looked at all the product types that could go there? And I'm assuming that you landed on housing or mixed-use type housing, so whether it's industrial buildings or hotels, you know, all the product types in real estate. But what's going to get us that meet that goal will be mixed-use housing. Is that what you've landed on?
Yeah, on a value-per-acre basis, there's nothing that's going to come close to how resident-dense multifamily-style housing. Industrial is going to spread it out between too many acres and too much acres for parking, and hotel, because you're not inside this 100,000 designation, it's hard to get a hotel that's going to rise above three or four stories and have surface parking right now. And so I would say we did the analysis, but like I mentioned, the typology is there. So if you feel comfortable allowing some more other commercial uses to have a way, setting the floor, what those should be, is really going to weed out some options, at least now, right? We're looking at a 20-year investment horizon, and so creating flexibility is important.
Sounds great. And then my second and last. As we all know, we are headed toward, we have goals of greenhouse gas emissions, right, standards. That infrastructure, I'm assuming that we have to include something in this nature that is going to help not only the city, but the residents and builders to meet that greenhouse gas. So do you anticipate future infrastructure costs that the city will be responsible for that? Because to me, that looks like base, what we're doing today, but future investment for sustainability.
Okay, I heard that. Yeah. So, yes, we spoke about that, and yes, that's part of phase two, but also part of the strategy of presenting this to y'all at this point, because you know, we talk about district heating and cooling systems, district energy and battery energy storage systems, having a green building standard minimum.
Charging station
designated across the site, right? Connector bus to shuffle people between there and the planned blue rail light rail station, right? Those are all add-ons on top. So seeing the dollar amount, the public subsidy costs on this as is before all those other centralized district-wide systems that have to be paid for up front, we felt like, let's see how all of you feel about what you're seeing right now before we go to that next level and really start refining, adding all these other layers on, because those can be added on. But the base things, as you said, the base things have to be in place.
Right. Okay, perfect.
So, quick question. So the totals you gave us, $1.7 billion.
This is the last question.
Does not compensate for phase two or phase three. So there will be additional and above $1.7 billion for scenario one and $750,000 for scenario two and $250,000.
Well, so the phases that Cameron was referring to are the phases of their work for us this summer.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But to that point, if we start to plan district stormwater, district heating and cooling, those are things that currently get added to this project.
So you're right. That dollar amount will get added up. Like, we really want to see a district heating and cooling system with an aquifer-based, geothermal loops, closed-loop system. That's great. That comes off at 1.7 million.
Yeah. You're getting a model house.
So we can keep it on track with the breakout sessions.
Okay, so find your name on the screen. That's the room you're going to. And for NAO and for city staff, let's kind of just evenly distribute ourselves across these three rooms. I want to make sure there's some NAO staff in each room in case there are technical questions that come up about the scenarios themselves. So at this point, let's come back at 8.
Literally.
Yeah. 4, 5, 6,
Between day 15 and day 20. Follow the your leader.
This is 203.
This is 203, 204, 205.
I just saw it lit up. Period.